Welcome to the Josh Bolton Show, where we dive into interesting and inspiring conversations. And now, your host, Josh Bolton.
Crowd here, let's see. This is like the most important part of a Zoom meeting.
Oh, well, then I failed. This is my actual background.
Yeah, mine. There you can see my beautiful environment here.
I'm not doing
it. I used to have all these like videos of like puppies playing and stuff. I like to mess with people. Here we go. We can do the. This is fine.
That one's perfectly now. That's perfect.
Well, hey, I am so sorry for missing you yesterday, man.
No, it was just a day heads up.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
It was just I've had a lot of people just literally be like, "Oh, I didn't know." It's like, fine, I'll just have it sent a day before now.
Right. Okay, good. That makes me feel better because I weirdly enough, by just some like twist of fate, I ended up having I had two other podcast interviews yesterday, and I totally missed them both. And
email said you had no power.
Yeah, this is like one of the wonderful joys of Southern California. It's like we're not quite Texas in the cold, but
random blackouts totally happen. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm like 30 miles south of LA.
Oh, really? No kidding. It's funny because I just moved to California 5 months ago or something like that. And, okay. You know, nobody knows their geography. So I was like, hey, like we should like drive to San Francisco for a day from Santa Barbara. And my wife is like, no. And like, you can get to LA in like 2.5 hours if you leave at exactly the right time of day, I guess.
Yeah. But if you go during rush hour, that's guaranteed 2 hours.
Yeah. You're out of luck. Well, it's good to meet you. I've listened to a couple episodes now, so I've got a pretty good sense. But is there anything you want to, I don't know, prep on?
So you told me you were into the VR, AR for people, and especially with the correlating with disabilities?
Yeah, exactly. I'll probably tell the story again, so I'll say it really in brief. But basically, I'm a speech language pathologist. I worked clinically for a long time with people that, you know, are nonverbal. Then in the last like 7 years, I've been building tools like for them to communicate. They started most, you know, a lot of tablet apps, things like that. But there are some people that are just completely paralyzed, locked in. So what we've just built is it's a brain computer interface paired with an augmented reality display. So
that's so fascinating. Yeah, you're going to definitely have to go into way more detail about that.
Yeah, I know. It's like I should it's always fun about things about podcasts. I could pull up a picture.
Well, I've had back in the late 90s, early 2000s, they thought I was like schizophrenic crazy, so they had me do a brain one. And even back then, they're like, think of a rabbit, and I thought of a rabbit, and it's like, boom. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Mike, yep. This is some weird voodoo shit. How do you know this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the difference now is just that stuff has gotten like we've gotten. This is the first one that's been like portable and wearable, you know, because they've had lab ones for ages, but they take, you know, a ton of electricity,
inefficient for the public to come see it because you have to schedule an appointment. All that, yeah,
right,
this is great.
Right.
So then, let's just get right into it, Lucas. Tell me about yourself, Lucas. What you do? What you've been doing the past COVID times?
The COVID times. Yes, I remember the before times, the long, long ago when we could.
Got it anymore? It's like a minute. Feels like forever.
I know it's been like both the longest and the shortest year of all time. But, So my name is Lucas Suber. I'm what am I? Here's my whole little narrative. Okay. I was my family is all very heavy business oriented people. And the expectation was always that I would be an MBA and go, I don't know, work for some hedge fund or whatever that would be. And ended up taking classes in computer science, thinking that maybe that was a good compromise for them in undergrad. And then my university had the audacity to force me to take classes outside of my like major. Like I think a lot of universities do this, right?
Like they do. Make it go longer.
Yeah. I think they try to say it's to round you out as an individual, right? But But I ended up taking a class in linguistics, and I think it was literally so I could sleep in on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Oh, nice.
Was like the motivation. But it was like, I don't know what a religious experience is, but it was like I just absolutely fell in love with the field. I had always been really into math, and which is, I know, one of those weird sentences that no one ever says. But I found a lot of commonality between what I liked about math and what I liked about language, and that it's systematic. It's something that can look very complex, that reduces itself into something very simple, but it's also very powerful. So I ended up getting a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in applied linguistics, focused on corpus and computational linguistics, which back then was a little bit less sophisticated than what you see with like Alexa and stuff these days. You know, it was just raw analysis of text. And my thesis was actually on language and schizophrenia. So that's
fun. Interesting.
You seem all right. We're doing good so far.
Okay.
So anyway, I decided that I wanted more student loan debt after that, and became a speech language pathologist, which is one of those fun job titles. Like, technically what I am is I'm a speech language pathologist and a product manager. And if somebody asks me on an airplane what I do for a living, I just want to tell them, like, I don't know, I catch cats on the street for fun, because I don't want to explain either of these things.
Or you could just go with the TikTok, I'm an accountant. They don't ask questions after
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. But then no one has to ask me about money, and I can't even count nickels, but... I worked, so speech language pathologist, there's a whole wide range of things that they do. I mean, the traditional one people think of is like King's Speech, or, you know, stuttering, speech sound disorders, you know, little kids that can't say their R sounds. That wasn't me at all. I ended up, getting involved with, I guess what we would call rare or low incidence, or even sometimes they call them orphan disorders, like really uncommon genetic or acquired conditions, which mostly leave people either completely nonverbal or completely paralyzed or both. For the past 7 years, I've been building what we call augmentative communication devices, which is a really funnily long phrase for a field that is supposed to help people communicate, like augmentative and alternative communication. But what everyone always thinks of is Stephen Hawking, right? Like, he was kind of the classic example of somebody who used a computer to speak. And there's a lot more of them than people realize. I mean, it's like basically like three New York cities of people in the United States.
So just real quick, what's the stats on that? Is it like 1 in 100, 1 in kind of thing?
I'm just going to remove autism spectrum from the equation, because that's
okay.
The one
that adds a whole lot in.
Yeah, that adds a bunch. But I mean, we're talking on the order of, a little bit under a million people in the U.S. alone that have a profound, what we would call a complex communication disorder. And that could be something that they're born with, like somebody with cerebral palsy, for example, that's highly impacted. Or it could be ALS, later in life, or Parkinson's, or even dementia. Aphasia after a stroke is a really big one. So there's a lot of folks. I tend to kind of think of them as this silent minority, right? Because you don't really encounter a lot of these people, because they're either in care homes or, you know, at home with family. One of the problems is that, to the best of my knowledge, or to my best of my math, only something like 7% of people that could benefit from augmentative communication are like even aware that it exists. Right. It's kind of a brand new field. And traditionally it's been really hard to get the stuff, you know, because you really, like, if you need to like have an eye gaze tracking machine, right? Because you have late stage ALS, and so you're looking at your computer to control things. I mean, these can be upwards of $16,000, right? So
yeah.
Unless you're Daddy Warbucks, you're going through insurance, and that's not always at the top of the list when you have other medical conditions. So one of my big goals over the last 7 years has been to sort of lower prices and democratize and raise awareness, and then most recently it came out with this brain computer interface coupled with AR VR, which I'm sure we'll talk about, because that's kind of probably the newest thing in the industry for a while. So,
well, just the VR AR industry, it's still so young, but it's growing so fast. The applications that we can fathom now are way too many in the future. Like, I've been reading articles about how they're going to use it strictly now for training, not even COVID, because it's like, it's a factory worker. They can see you and be like, oh, move your hands here.
Yep. And we've thought about that same sort of stuff in the disability space. Like, if you have, you know, a child with autism or Down syndrome, to cue them to wash their hands for long enough, you know, in the bathroom, or to look both ways before they cross the road. I mean, there's all kinds of really interesting contextual data we can get from things like computer vision and the LiDAR sensors that are in like new iPads and things like that. So,
well, I think I was just hearing on a tech podcast that Google Nest, I guess, now has sonar, so we can detect where you are exactly if you're breathing and sleeping and all that.
Wow.
It's creepy that Google now knows exactly where you're at, but that's immediately the same thing. Like, wow, that's actually really good.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me, you know, Alexa just released their Home Guard thing, which is not, I don't think exactly the same, but it listens for things like glass breaking and, you know, just abnormal noises, dogs barking, you know, as a way to sort of like notify you. So there's all kinds of, that's one of the most interesting things, especially with AR and VR, and brain computer interface for that matter, is that, you know, we're building this for a specific use case, right? Which is people that are like paralyzed, locked in, need to communicate, want to play Angry Birds, watch YouTube, you know, everything that I'd want to do if I was, you know, paralyzed. But I'm really, really curious to see what people will come up with, right? For a long time, I've heard people say that AR, VR is a really amazing technology that has a lack of content, right? And that's kind of true. Like, I remember getting like one of the original Oculus, and it was like, do I want to play Roller Coaster Simulator 1 or Roller Coaster Simulator 17? You know, it was like, or I could shoot some zombies, you know? And it's come a ways since then, but I mean, it's a far way from maximizing its potential.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's like we were mentioning earlier, it's so new that there's just limitless possibilities. There's stuff we'll never be able to think of today.
Right. Yeah, well, it'll be great to watch. I mean, I like being a quote unquote young professional. I don't know if 40 counts as that, but I get to watch this for a while still and see what happens. But in the case of like our device, I mean, we have Amazon has been really gracious with us, so we actually have Alexa built into the wearable device. So it's very much possible that you could be sitting in your room and look over at the fan and use the brain computer interface, activate the fan, right? Or turn off the lights, or turn on the television, those sorts of things. And, you know, you think about the autonomy that affords someone that's in that situation. Like there's a condition that only affects women called Rett syndrome, this is kind of how I got into this. I had a student with Rett. And she was 17 years old. And she never really had a system to communicate with at all. And so we got her set up with this eye gaze control thing on a Windows machine. And the very first thing she did was navigate down to the start menu and launch solitaire. And I was just like, you have observationally for 7 years, like figured out how to do this stuff. Like, that's wild. Like, to, you know, to think of like, to have that experience, to be able to perceive everything around you, but not be able to interact with it.
That would be crippling also just mentally.
Yeah, right. Well, and then that's the thing is like, how often does a 17-year-old girl with Rett syndrome get to slam the door on her parents or leave her room messy or whatever, you know? I mean, the only option that these kids have is refusal, basically, to do something. And then in the schools, they get put on a plan because they're, you know, not compliant and this other stuff. And it's like, no, this kid is just frustrated, you know? He can't do anything.
So wait, Rett syndrome, before they become completely immobilized, but they're perfectly healthy and normal?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's kind of the opposite of what you think of paraplegia. So it impacts waist up. So they won't have any voluntary movement of their hands or trunk. And there's often a lot of scoliosis, like spine sort of stuff. The range of intelligence in Rett syndrome, it's actually in the same family of disorders as autism spectrum disorder. So there are definitely more highly impacted and less highly impacted individuals. But I know plenty of girls with Rett that could sit there with an eye gaze keyboard and write a novel, you know. And then I know some that are a little bit more limited to yes and no. But that's part of our job in speech pathology is number one to always presume competence, right? Start at the top. So I start at the most complex and work your way back. And, you know, but then also do what we call feature matching and make sure that we're, you know, giving them a system that doesn't immediately frustrate them and piss them off, because then it's over, right? If they don't like it, they're not going to try it again.
Yeah, bad taste in the mouth. It's like, I'm not going back.
Yep. Exactly.
So, I want to say, I want to go in a little bit of the AR, VR, and you said the mental interface. So let's first go to the mental. How does that work? The chip?
Yeah, sure. So there's, and you know, we're in podcast land here. If you go to just anyone listening, it's one.cognition, which is CognixIon.com. You can see some pictures to get your head around it, but it looks a fair amount like an Oculus or like a PlayStation VR sort of thing. So there's a headband that goes around, and for someone who doesn't have any hair like me, it works real well and easily. You know, there's some adjustments on the electrodes for people with thicker hair, longer hair, but there's basically two ground electrodes at your temples, and then there's five electrodes at your occipital lobe, which is what handles the back of your head. Which is what handles vision. And so what we use is what's called an evoked response. So like, say you're walking down the street and like your arm is just doing its arm thing. And, you know, there's a nerve in it that's chilling out and having a good day. And then somebody suddenly pinches you. Like that would be what we'd consider an evoked response. It's like a spike in your neural activity. Like, ow, like that, what is this? And so we're not pinching people.
Hopefully not.
We just say, that's not a good modality for communication.
See, we're recording on St. Patrick's Day, so as long as you're not wearing green, it's okay.
Oh, no. I'm not wearing green.
You got your background.
Yes, there we go. Okay.
That's and why I'm you were changing
a,
it.
I'm kind of a ginger, so I get a pass.
Yeah, you get a complete pass for that one.
But so what we use is, they're called steady states or code-modulated visual evoked potentials. So, so say for example, you're looking through this, it's actually a mixed reality display. So you can see the world around you, and then there's a hologram projected, which can be folders of phrases or a keyboard or, control mechanism for Alexa. There's a lot of different stuff that can come up. Well, every one of those, interface icons is, really rapidly flashing at a specific frequency. So it'll be like 12 Hertz or 18 Hertz or, you know, 23 Hertz. And what we can do is actually look at, if you picture it as like a sine wave in the occipital lobe, what right. It suddenly starts to match that the frequency of the one specific interactive item, then we're able to figure out that's what they're attending to and then activate it. So it's real reliable. I wouldn't say it's fast necessarily. I mean, people are running about 17 words per minute, creating it, which actually is quite good for AAC, but you know, you and I talking right now is something like 100 words per minute. So we're always looking to improve that. But, one of the things that's critical about this is, take that, Elon Musk. We beat you to market because he's doing the Neuralink piece.
Yeah.
But that's we deliberately avoided doing an invasive solution, right? I think it's going to be challenging enough to educate, you know, a 70-year-old person with ALS on, you know, how to become a cyborg without, you know, putting bullets in their brain. So
literally as starters. Just as he was, there was the whole thing at work because I guess Musk was doing that, the pig display, and everyone was like, oh my God, it's so great. I'm like, yeah, but here's the biggest problem with everything. He said, he has to go into your brain. I said, is there anesthesia? Because if there's anesthesia, there's a mild chance you could die getting this.
Right.
Very mild.
Yeah, well, especially chance. When you're... Yeah, and there's also a lot of questions about the migration of those implants, and if you do like an MRI or something like that, you know, are they just going to blow out of your head like shrapnel? You know, and I listen, especially for things like deep brain stimulation for tremors and things like that, I'm absolutely in support. I'm really glad to see somebody throwing a bunch of money behind it. But, you know, going back to the affordability piece, you know, right now, if you're using like an eye gaze computer, I mean, literally just, you know, picture a monitor in front of you with a little tracking bar. And you've got a grid of icons or whatever, and you sit there and you fixate on one, and then you fixate on the next, you fixate on the third. But one thing that's lacking from that the entire time is real human interaction, right? Like you're not like looking the other person in the eye because you're blocked by this thing. Right. And so that was one of our goals, was to have this overlay where you still could be making eye contact, you're still observing your surroundings, you're still looking at the person and chatting with them. You know, spoiler alert, it's going to be substantially less expensive than the traditional eye gaze solutions, even though it's a lot more sophisticated. So,
so what's your price target for that?
Is my CEO near me? I don't know. To be determined. I mean, we know how much it costs us, and we know how much it costs to maintain and this other stuff. What is a little bit of an X factor is the resale market and what that's going to look like. Because I really do not want to build quote unquote boots on the ground from a sales perspective for this, you know, to hire 100 people to go out and sell it. You know, I want to contract with other folks. Logistically, it's just a lot easier. And so that's where we sort of don't know. But I do know that like the Medicaid cap for a device like this is $16,700, which is exactly why everyone charges $16,700. And we want to come in below that, not just so that we're, you know, the low cost best alternative, but also so that, you know, potentially people could buy it themselves. Like one quirk of our wonderful American insurance system is that you only get funding for a speech generating device every 5 years. And so say you have like, I'll use ALS as an example again, which is a degenerative disorder. So like maybe you're starting to have some trouble talking, but your hands still work. So you go and get a touchscreen communication device. And then 2 years later, you've generated to the point where you need eye gaze and you just blew your funding, right? You can't redo that piece. And so, what we've tried to do is create this sort of story where we actually have an app that works on the iPod or the iPad, and then you can go to the iPod or iPhone, and then you can go to the iPad where we have eye tracking, and then you can graduate from that to you know, to the wearable when you need it, the app for the iPod or iPad is, you know, it's $150, which isn't nothing, but it's a lot more affordable than $17,000.
Yeah. Just thinking about it, because I know there are some apps that are complete garbage intentionally, and it's $1,000 to buy it. So and someone apparently bought it.
Yeah. What was that thing?
The diamond one.
Yeah.
Think for fun, they tried to do 10,000, but no one was like, after the $1,000 one, they're like, screw you.
I feel like if you buy that, like a trap door should just open and you just fall in a pit.
Well, like, and it's also just a generic diamond off the internet. It's not even like he even tried.
You know, on the one hand, like, that's terrible. But on the other, I'm in the wrong business, man.
Right?
I got some crazy. But do you remember those guys that sold the million pixel website where you could buy like one pixel for $1,000?
Right. No. I think No, it was a million. So it was a million pixels at $1 each.
You were $1. That's what it was. Yeah, and you know, some people would like try to make art with whatever. And it's interesting because I've actually followed that story a little bit. The kid paid his way through college from that idea. So, you know, again, good for him. Never would have thought of it. But nope. Hey, I'm building brain computer interfaces, so I'm in the weird category too.
Yeah, and you'll definitely be successful because. Especially with COVID and all the different shifting, that concept already of augmented reality is very well accepted. And I think it's like in 20 years, it's going to be like a 80-90 billion industry.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think that might even be low. Yeah.
That might
be. And two comments on that. I mean, the first one is that COVID actually has one of the unintentional positives has then it's really raised awareness of augmented communication. And we actually put out a flip book that you could laminate in the hospitals that had, you know, basic just like choices and comments and things. But then frankly, it also had, you know, some end of life language, please take me off the ventilator or whatever. Cause some, you know, these folks, they're perfectly cognizant. They're just, they were intubated, right? So they couldn't speak for the first time in their lives. And there were tons of them. There still are tons of them. So that actually has provoked a lot of hospitals to look at just having things like, you know, like a mountable eye gaze computer up above, the hospital bed so that people that are intubated can communicate, which I've been saying for years, we need to do that at the dentist office because yes. The dentist will always ask me like, what'd you do last weekend? And I'm like, give me a computer so I can say like, shut up. Where'd you get your license? You crack. Like, you know? So that's been sort of an unintentional, benefit. And then as far as the ubiquity of AR/VR. I mean, it's like the comparison I like to make is about 150,000 years ago. When we look at human remains, their feet bones suddenly got a lot smaller and a lot weaker. Mm-hmm. And it was right around the time that we started finding shoes in burial sites. So like we literally exported part of our body's capacity into our environment because we sort of assumed that this prosthetic would always be there, like shoes. And when people will say something like, I don't want to carry my iPad around with me to communicate or whatever. It's like, all right, well, I'm wearing glasses and I'm wearing clothes because I'm cold and I'm wearing shoes because my feet otherwise would hurt. Like we all are users of prosthetics. And we're all users of AAC in a sense. I would say that I send more email and text messages per day than I do speak. You know, all that oral language really is squirting air through the meat on your face. it's not particularly elegant.
It's not. And if any other creature listening to us, it sounds like we're just screaming like an absolute banshee. And it's like, what are you doing?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and it's fun to listen to. I have a friend that... I can't believe he got money to do this, but he dressed up drones in hawk costumes and flew them around the forests in Oregon. And come on, what a job.
So fucking cool.
I know. And what he did is he put all these microphones around and he listened to the squirrels because what he wanted to know was, are they just like, oh no. Or are they saying, oh no, hey, little squirrel buddies, there's a hawk to the north or to the west or whatever. And it turns out, the squirrels are actually warning each other. Like they actually have different noises for like the direction that the predator is coming from. And that's how this must have started, right? I mean, that's like, there's the beginning of human language. And then the evolution since then has really just been so that we can like more specifically articulate an individual descriptive point or something. Right. You know?
Yeah. Well, one thing I've noticed, there's no like articles or anything I can back it, but I've personally come to the conclusion of, like, let's say elephants, they're very smart, gentle, big beasts, and we could literally forget each other's face within like 2 months of each other. The elephant will remember us by the time it dies, kind of thing.
Right.
But
right.
It's one of those, I guess they show similar attributes as us. So like we see the dead, we mourn, we have a burial. Apparently they do exactly the same thing. My thought is essentially, what if literally the only difference is, well, our shape, but also just communication? We might be just the screaming squirrel in the corner and they're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, why is this thing making so much noise? Yeah, that was so Noam Chomsky, right? The linguist of linguists, he made the comment that the only thing that differentiates humans from other animals is language. And I object to that on two levels, actually. One of them is that I know plenty of people that can't speak that I still qualify as human. Number two is I think that there actually is more complex communication going on. I have another friend that his PhD dissertation was teaching chimpanzees to exchange pictures, and it was like a picture of food, and they'd get food and that sort of thing. So at the heart of language is this concept of symbolic representation. Like, you know, like it, like the most concrete example of a dog, for example, is a dog. Like, okay, hey, right. There's a dog. And then there's a picture of a dog, which is, okay, that's still a dog. And then there's like a drawing of a dog, which is like, okay, that's a dog, you know. And there's an advantage to the drawing because it could be like any genus of dog, right? It doesn't have to be just like a golden retriever, right? And then the whole another level of abstraction is the sounds coming out of dog, right? And to understand all those layers of abstraction going all the way back is not only pretty remarkable, but is certainly not unique to humans. I mean, George, yep, there comes my cat. So we have symbolic knowledge, folks.
That's what do you call, is it, was George your cat or your dog?
George is the cat.
Yeah, okay. I thought it was the dog for some reason. I'm like, well, you called for a dog and you got a cat instead.
No, yeah. that sounds about right. The cat would be like, what do you want? Go away, dog.
Yeah. So then for what I'm gathering right now, correct me if I'm wrong. So when we think of like the dog, it will, if we're thinking to display it, it would actually show us in the actual interface, right?
Right. So this isn't mind reading. And in fact, for anyone who's sitting here thinking about it, even like the Alexa thing that I talked about is opt in. All the processing happens on the device. So it's very privacy oriented. It's very compliant with HIPAA and all those different things, GDPR. So, you know, I definitely would not be shocked in my lifetime to see a brain computer interface that could do something like that. And there are in fact some, in lab work that can at least identify, you know, the colors that you're looking at and things like that. But for us, what we do is, yes, we call it a closed loop system, and it's specifically response to presented stimuli, you know, that are at these different frequencies. So, you know, again, it's keyboard phrases, but we're trying to incorporate, and when we launch this thing, it's really going to be, which is just, it's soon. I mean, it's working now. It's just, we got to make a bunch of them. it's going to be launching for what we call the adult literate population. So like, again, the ALS, the older CP, things like that, people that can use a predictive keyboard, right. To spell and like have some literacy and can read, a sentence. There's a couple places I want to go from there. And one of them is into the more pediatric space where it is a lot more symbol driven rather than orthographic, right? So instead of letters, you might have, that symbol of a dog, you know, whereas an adult might actually go D-O-G, but developmentally, especially kids that have a cognitive impairment, that they need something a little bit different. So I'd like to work on that system. And then part two is if I'm laying in bed paralyzed after a motorcycle accident or whatever it might be.
Heaven forbid.
Like, I don't want to just say dog. I want to play Angry Birds and watch YouTube and, you know, all kinds of other stuff. And so that's kind of a next step, too, is to get those things integrated. And the group that we work with, I'm a clinician. We have our R&D group is mostly neurologists and biosignals analysts. We're not game designers. So if anyone out there is listening that is a game designer, we would absolutely love to incorporate, things like that into the system.
I was actually just thinking, I'm like, even if it's not just the paraplegic people who can't talk kind of thing, it'd just be awesome to have like an interface where you can look and then just like swipe with your eyes and be like, okay, I'm on this page of my phone now. And then like swipe again and like I'm playing, I don't know, some video game kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, and spoiler alert is that that sort of eye tracking is absolutely coming to phones and is already in iPads. So, but there the motivation for that is mostly to figure out which ads you're looking at for the longest amount of time. Not,
yes.
You know.
Or you have to pay $10.
But yeah, like the other day, my wife was cooking in the kitchen, and our little Alexa is in there. It's, you know, you have the ones a little with a screen, so it does the recipes or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And I was trying to get it to turn on the lights, and it couldn't hear me because of all the stuff that was going on. And I was like, man, I need the visor so I could just be like, boop, lights. Like, you know, like this is, you know, that's part of what I mean by I'm curious to see what people will do with it, because like one of my tenants, and I don't know if this is just a me thing or if this is a business rule, but I think if you build for the hardest use case first, then it's going to be a lot easier to generalize into, you know, other populations. And so my sincere hope is that what we've built is going to end up being useful for, you know, a lot more than just people with disabilities.
Do you think eventually it will downgrade to more of like your glasses? It won't look like the Google Lens where it's a freaking, like, you obviously see an antenna coming off kind of thing, but it's just, do you think eventually with technology and with everything, it might actually be just like your glasses?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, the biggest problem that we face is actually, the funny comparison is hearing aids. So there's a really similar problem with both in terms of signal to noise ratio. So there's like a whole ton of electrical activity going on the skin and in the brain, right? And so the big work of like the algorithm and the electrodes is to try to find that specific sign pattern among all this other junk that's going on. And that's why these things normally have been in labs, right? Because they need to be plugged in and take a bunch of juice, you know. One of the big things here is that this is portable and effective. But hearing aids are similar. Like if you think about the ones, like I think my grandfather had one in like the 70s where it just amplified everything and he hated it because like the whole room was just loud. But mm-hmm. They put all this work into the math of you know, near field sound detection and like trying to pay attention to the person you're actually listening to and sort of ignore everything else. And simultaneously, they're under all this pressure to increase battery life and to make the thing smaller and all these other things. So I could absolutely see glasses. In fact, there was a company called North that made some glasses that had some basic interaction stuff like that using the muscles around the eyes.
Interesting.
To measure. I think that the our specific paradigm in terms of the way that we do it by looking at the occipital lobe, you know, you'd have to have like wraparound glasses
to do it. You look like a Geordi from Star Trek.
I'm down. I don't know if like how many, you know, 70-year-olds want to turn into cyborgs, but but I would wear those. What I say about visual evoked potentials, it's not the only type of this. Like, so like Stephen Hawking as an example, like the way that he communicated was by twitching like essentially one eye muscle, to scroll through, his systems. That's what he had.
I thought he would actually look at it. That's why it would take him so long to reply. He had a little display of the words and he had to look at the word or he had to like scroll to find the other one.
Yeah, well, he scrolled by using this one muscle. So it would actually like tap through the different, and often he would pre-compose what he wrote. He actually did not use an eye gaze or what we call a reflectometry system. And he could have switched to one by the last 10 years of his life, but he just had been using the one for so long. He liked it. I know the guy that built it for him and he's at Intel and, it's very creative. But this is another thing that we find, right, is that once you get used to using a specific system, you know, it's like I was in the airport in France, like, I don't know, 10 years ago or something in Charles de Gaulle, which is like the nastiest airport in Europe. And you could rent a computer for like €5 every 10 minutes. And I was like, I'm going to check my mail. And then I went to look at the keyboard and I was like, what the heck is this? Because it was all laid out totally differently, right? Because it's a French keyboard. Mm-hmm. And it's not that dissimilar from learning a new system. You know, if you're like you're familiar with something like Steven was, or like I have, patients now that still want to use the same thing they had 5-10 years ago, even though there's better technology. And, okay. You know, it's not my choice to make.
Right. Yeah. I think it's more comfort because if you have to do the new thing, it's uncomfortable. So I just stick with the clunky old thing.
Right. Right. Yep. And yeah. And then whatever the learning curve is, and then there's some things that they just may not want to use. Thinking of my wife in particular, like, you know, Fulbright scholar, brilliant person, master's in linguistics, does not organize in any way the apps on her phone and doesn't check or care about notifications. Like, it drives me nuts. I look at her phone and then
I get an email. That's why I was so quick for you. I'm like, Jesus Christ, there's a notification.
Yeah, I know. I can't stand it. It's like, it drives me nuts. And then, like, I'll look at her inner settings and she's like six versions of iOS behind or whatever. And so I'll be like, all right, hey, honey, I'm going to upgrade your phone. And then she's like, there's widgets now. I hate this. Like, what, you know, what do I do? I'm like, okay, I'll get you a flip phone. But, you know, again, I make jokes, but that's perfectly, I mean, again, it's not my decision, right? It's perfectly reasonable. So, I mean, I still wear a Nirvana t-shirt all the time from like,
oh God, that's good. That's a good continuation.
Okay. Yeah. This is getting a little ratty.
Yeah. Because some of the kids, I work currently night shift at a local store, and they don't even know, like, Metallica.
Wow.
And I'm like, I just sat there, I'm like, God, you're missing out. You listen to your Spotify with all your hip-hop and Post Malone and all that shit, I'm like, you're missing on a whole thing. Just, I told them, like, look up this playlist. It's Metallica, Iron Maiden, Nirvana, and all this. And they're like, hey, this is actually good shit, man. I'm like, I know, it's 30-plus years old. It's still freaking better than stuff out now.
You got to start handing out like mixtapes, like an Empire Records. There was something. It was like a Sublime song that was playing or something, and I saw somebody say like, "Oh, is that song from TikTok?" And I was like, "I'm gonna build a power armor suit and just kick you into the moon because that is just not okay." and actually, to return to our topic at hand, this is a problem with the pediatric disability spaces. You'll find like that same girl I was thinking of, the 17-year-old girl, they were still playing like, you know, Peppa the Pig stuff and Rescue Rangers or whatever. And it's like, this girl's 17, man. She probably wants to be watching like, I don't know, 17. Like, she's almost rated R. Like, give her something developmentally appropriate. So.
Right. Wow. No, so is it just the Peppa the Pig part, and then we'll go back to the actual augmented reality? Was that by choice, or was it because of the interface you had?
I think it was it was a mixture, right? So the interface that she had that was built, particularly back then, they were kind of clunky. Like, you almost had to be a programmer to
use it.
To make changes to the overall layout. Now it's a lot more like drag and drop, like, you know, traditional modern design. And so once it got configured, it was the challenge to sort of get new music or new pictures in there. But then part two is that, you know, she listened to it. It would calm her down. You know, she'd sort of chill out, you know, which is true for me too. If I listen to like that, what is that Rappy song about the watermelon by the sea or whatever.
I don't know that one. I've never heard of it.
The magic dragon by the sea. Like, I mean, you know, I'm like, it makes me a little happy. I'm like, yeah, I remember being a kid. Like, that's fun. But, you know, part of the goal here too is that, you know, for the longest time, students, you know, in like high school or whatever, that, you know, might be perfectly like CP again, I'll go back to, but there might be no cognitive impairment, and yet they have to carry in this like nuclear football briefcase with them and put it down and set it up and communicate. Nobody wants to be that kid, right? No. But everybody wants to be the kid that gets to use the iPad in class, and you know, and then by extension, you also want to be sort of mirroring your peers' behavior, you know, listening to the same music, watching the same movies, all that sort of stuff. These kids and these adults are no different from you or I. It's just that they have custom built bodies, as we like to put it.
Not necessarily a bad thing, but that sounds actually kind of that weird, cool. I'd like to be a cyborg too.
Yeah. I know. I've been telling people I'd be the first. I share your thing about the anesthesia, but once I feel comfortable, I'll do all kinds of stuff. I could live with the cyberpunk future minus the dystopia.
So you get one or the one with the other. You don't get the one, but not the other.
And you know, the biggest like implantation stuff that is most successful right now and is really well accepted in the medical community is stuff like that you like need to live, like heart implants, certain stuff for the lungs. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if, especially with what's going on with pollution and the climate, that, you know, some of the first augmentations we see are like HEPA filters in your lungs, you know?
That's interesting. You know, yeah.
It may not be as visible as a robot arm.
Or with CRISPR, we might, it will take us a couple of generations, but also just we change ourselves to be more adapted to whatever.
Yep.
Then
yep,
there becomes yep, a whole like more the, problem with that too.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a whole ethical, that's a whole episode right there. But yeah, seriously. Like back to the foot example, you know, I mean, it takes time for humans or for plants for that matter to adapt to new environments or whatever. But like, you know, on the one hand, we've got way tastier and way more varieties of apples and tomatoes than we, you know, than our ancestors ever did because of GMO. On the other hand, we only have one remaining kind of banana because of GMO and true, because everyone liked the one. And, you know, God forbid there's some disease that hits that, then we are banana-less, which is actually fine with me because I don't really like bananas, but.
But yeah, that's a big staple for a lot of people is eating bananas, even though it's a carby, sugary mess.
Right, right, right. And so we wouldn't want to put ourselves in the situation as, you know, as a race where we're, you know, sort of like sharing the same strengths and the same weaknesses, right? I think that there's a great, great, you know, value and perseverance in diversity.
There
you
is.
Know, like the healthiest dogs are always mutts, right? Not the purebred.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Actually, I have a purebred little guy for my dad, and he's since day one, he's had hip problems, lung problems, this problem, the little one that's crossbreeded, freaking the healthiest little thing ever.
Yeah. The cat I was just talking about, he's like 18 and I don't think he's ever going to die.
they but probably he's like, won't.
Yeah. Well, but he looks just like, I don't know. He looks like a cat. Like it is, there's no like fluffiness or flat face or, you know, he's not going to win any awards. He just, I don't know. He's a cat. So anyway, this conversation, has, I don't know if it's off the rails or on the rails or a different set of rails, but I'm enjoying it.
I like it too. That's why I haven't changed anything. I was just like, we're going to go down this at, never mind. but actually let's pull back for the AR for the, you were talking about the different interfaces for the people, but so, and you were hinting that like multiple use, if you do the hardest case, then it's easier to make it easier. Would you say someone like us, like, just pure laziness and comfort. We just look, like you said, look at the light, turn it off. Cause my light's a smart light. I can turn off if I want, but that would actually, I was thinking about that as you're going, it's like, what if I have the TP-Link smart power brick on your wall? So you could literally go in and turn on and off. There's just suddenly it's like the, wow, there really is a lot off app. I'm looking at my wall. And I don't need to, sorry.
Yeah.
But it's there's so many applications now that once you mention that, I'm like, wow. So what are some other applications just you thinking about that could be implemented?
Oh, man. Well, thermostat would be a big one. There's actually a story in New York Times recently about a woman with ALS who got a divorce from her husband because he wouldn't turn the fan on enough when she asked for it. Or at least that was, you know, I'm sure there was more to it than that, but that was what they said. And I was thinking, like, I could have saved that marriage. Like, we could totally do these things. But I mean, that it's a really interesting question, right? Especially as everything becomes smart, you know, like smart microwave, smart, you know, I just saw that Amazon has smart shelves for your counters now that'll weigh your food and like when it runs low, you know, and which. I'll restrain my comments on that one, but I mean, I think there's a ton of possibility. I do think that it's also, you know, I know that I can't sit here and come up with every one of them, right? Like I would be, I'll be really interested to see what people come up with, but, in sort of our world, like if we, like going back to your glasses idea, like if you had glasses with like a LiDAR camera on it, which is that's the type of camera that like Tesla's used to navigate, you know, right. It's like a, you know, sonar kind of thing, where you can like, you know, interpret your environment, those sorts of things, you know, paired with now what they call computer vision, which is really cheap to implement either through Google or Microsoft. I mean, you could look around your room, and if you go to that, again, the website, one.cognition.com, we have some simulations of what it would be like to look around your house and, you know, see like sort of a little circle around the light bulb. And then like, you know, the TV is clearly actionable, and you can then change the channels and those sorts of things. And this is not sci-fi like that. That is very much
a thing possible right now.
Today. Yeah. I think that the next hurdle is going to be like, if it, you know, for folks like you and me, if we can figure out a way to sort of activate that hands-free without, without the brain computer interface, then that's great. But then what's the difference between that and just talking to Alexa, right?
Yeah.
You know, so we would want that other piece, you know, the being able to sense the sort of like intentionality. And so it's just a matter of time. Like all of this stuff, all these technologies, like I bought a new TV the other day. It was $139 and it was like 32 inches. And like, I remember I sold TVs at Circuit City in like 1998 and they were like $7,000. Like what the heck happened? Like and my point is like all of this stuff becomes commodified. Like I fully expect brain computer interfaces to be ubiquitous in 10 years. And it's interesting to me that the first place that seems to be happening is in like the meditation like realm, you know?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, I just think about it. I would never have thought of that direction for it, but yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't either, but it also, frankly, it's kind of in, I don't want to call it easy, but it's a lot easier to sense a sort of overall calming of the electrical activity in the brain than it is to seek out a single signal. So that's probably part of it. But yeah, I've got one of those Muse things. It's pretty cool. I don't know. It told me I was calm and I was calm, so it's right.
Correlation, it works. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I'll take it. Yep.
Yeah. So for the interfaces that you have, cause we were talking about the different applications, by the way, I'll send you an email for all your different links and stuff you haven't messaged. Wow. I can't talk for some reason.
You need a speech therapist.
I know. Okay. Next. Yeah. Just my brain goes way too fast. For the different interfaces and, interactions, when like we were just saying the getting cheaper, do you think one thing I've been hearing on my tech stuff, and I actually kind of agree, do you think eventually we'll get to a contact lens, not even glasses?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And there's labs already working on it actually that, they've got, well, with rats anyway, they've got these 16 pixel bionic sort of contact lenses that have some of the same activation quality. So yes, we could absolutely get there. I mean, the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, I'm working in private industry, you know, Elon's working in private industry. There's a handful of other companies. I mean, there's probably maybe five competitors sort of in this space. Nobody's doing the AR VR, but you know who I know for a fact is doing that is NASA and the military, right? But if you're, you know, flying a fighter jet, you only got two hands, and you know, if you're able to look over at the enemy and sort of like target them with a brain computer interface and launch a missile or whatever, that has enormous value for them. So a lot of us in the industry have sort of signed a pledge not to endorse the military stuff, but you know, there's so many different things. I mean, heck, Velcro came out of NASA, right? I mean, there's
I think it's duct tape too and super glue.
Yeah, and what was it? Ballpoint pens, I think, was
that, and I think baby food also.
Oh, like, really? Babies in space?
No.
You mean like?
I think it was a recipe for the astronauts for food. It was dry. You only add water, kind of thing, and just shake. But it just turned out it was so nutritious that actually was it kind of just indirectly became baby food.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that reminds me of that astronaut ice cream stuff. The
freeze-dried?
Powdery, but yeah. Mm-hmm. But right. So I mean, that's an area that, you know, we don't have a lot of insight into, nor do I necessarily want to, but, that's another place that drives a lot of innovation. So again, we're starting with this, you know, this disability use case. This is arguably the most underserved population in the world. Doing our best to serve that, and then we'll see where it generalizes from there. There are, you know, I guarantee there's other folks working on some more ideas.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's the moment also, like you were saying, we don't want the military involved. It's the devil could help you, but also ruin everything you do, because he would give you all the funding you need. But then it's like, at what cost did we just do this for?
Yeah, it's like the whole take bad money and put it towards good kind of thing, think what Oppenheimer was trying to do. And then he was like, whoa, I have destroyed the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting. It's a morally challenging question, right? Because there's also the argument that if not us, then someone will, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that we, you know, have the technology has progressed to a point that we as a startup, as a relatively small team, have managed to get this thing working. And we have some very talented people, don't get me wrong, but it's not irreplicable. It's going to be really interesting to watch.
It is.
My hope, you know, another application that I see probably coming to light even sooner than later is gaming. You know, especially when you think about the VR AR stuff, where you already have the, you know, sort of the straps and the positioning that you'd already need. Mm-hmm. So once those price points come down, I think that would be pretty cool. Be able to, you know, could be controlling a character and handling something else completely different with BCI.
That's true. And then, yeah, there's some startups also working on the interface where you walk and the treadmill keeps up with you. So even if you randomly switch, it can keep up with you. Yeah.
I would wanted to try one of those. Yeah,
I would too. Oh my God. And you know, that would be the greatest thing, because then you could actually get gamers in shape because they have to move.
Yeah. There is. I saw something like that. It was not like a Peloton or whatever, but it was like a treadmill where it, like, you know, there was like a, it was like a Mario Kart almost kind of display where you had to like run through whatever. And I was like, I could do that. I could totally do this.
So you gotta add that into your current project with your startup, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. Give them a little exercise. Yeah. And actually that brings up a whole other point of like dysfunctional utility, right? I mean, if we're talking about people with dementia or with aphasia or any kind of cognitive impairment, pull up an overlay of the map home, right? You know, or I mean, we have fall detection on this thing too. So, I mean, if it hits the ground real hard, it's going to notify, you know, your emergency contacts and those sorts of things. So, I mean, sky's the limit, right?
Yeah.
And like I said at the beginning, I think that the ARVR industry has been a really strong one that's had a poverty of content, and I think companies like Valve are starting to change that. I know Unity is doing a good job with that sort of stuff. So but, you know, it's not always for everybody. I mean, the CEO of our company, who's, you know, obviously the person who's like proselytizing ARVR for this population, he doesn't like using his Oculus because he feels like it's too isolating of an experience. Like, he's like in the room with his kids, but he can't see him. He can't be there, right? So that's one of the motivations for the mixed reality, right? So you're still there and involved. But I can totally see some cool game where, like, you know, I think they have something like this where, like, the one person has the view of the bomb and, like, everyone else has the instructions of how to defuse it. You have to, like, describe.
That would be an interesting game. I know there's some where for the AR VR aspect, I think it's PlayStation that's done this well, is you're still using your controller, but your screen is not locked in front of you. So if you can actually look to your right, and you'll actually see what's to your right. Sorry, I'm looking to my left.
It looked right from the camera.
Oh, good. I did camera right. So Yeah, it's just that one, because one of my buddies had me try it. I think it was like Call of Duty at the time. And it was just one of those, I would actually, like, my heart rate really kicked up because of it. He had the really noise canceling loud bass ones, headphones.
Oh, right. So you're totally immersed.
Yeah, there was no alterations. And that's where I looked and I heard a thing whiz past me and I looked straight because I'm like, oh God, it's coming for me. Kind of
Yeah.
thing.
I have one of those PSVRs. I gotta use that more often because they sort of they age quickly. Like any game system, you know. So like my suspension of disbelief is like a little bit lower than it used to be. But one of the only movies that was ever filmed in an ARVR context was The Martian with Mr. Damon. So I
Interesting.
rented it for $30 or something ridiculous on Oculus, and I watched like the first 10 minutes of it, and I went to take a break and got up, and just like my legs just stopped working. I just was like flop. I was like, oh right, like I'm in the real world again, you know. So it's another thing we need to be conscious of is
Yeah.
Maintaining some perception of your environment.
Well, I mean, just with the 3D cameras getting cheaper and cheaper and more quality, I mean, just your aspect alone, we could just be talking and then kind of like a VR chat, the computer game, you just look, full on just game playing around while you're watching the person.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Or going back to our use case, again, think about that girl with Rett syndrome. Like, how often has she, been able to go on a roller coaster, right? Or shoot zombies. So I guess not many of us have been able to shoot zombies in real life. But
Yeah.
anyway, point being, there's a lot more to life than just communication. But it's a powerful place to start. I mean, at a very fundamental level, communication is how you can it's how you impact and how you control your environment.
Absolutely.
We want to make sure everybody has access to that. And it's a long road, you know. I mean, I said it was like something like 7% in the United States. It's like under 1% worldwide, people that have access to this. But the growing ubiquity of things like multi-touch tablets, cheap Android, things like that, it's going to open up a lot of possibilities.
It is, and it's going to be an interesting but good world to be in.
Yeah, right. That's a good way to put it. Interesting, but good. But I mean, that what C.S. Lewis said, like, the greatest curse of all time is may you live in interesting times. And that was 2020, I think. So I'll take
Yeah.
good interesting.
Yeah. It's not a trash fire of a year, the COVID. Oh, you came to Cal because you mentioned earlier you came to California 5 months ago. So you came in the heat of everything.
I did. We waited. So I was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for my previous company that I worked for, called Tobii Dynavox, which is an eye tracking. A lot of people are familiar with Tobii from video game eye tracking, but we had like a brief window where we went to like, fuchsia or whatever the colors are that everyone's using, and just triple masked and got on the plane and had our stuff shipped in one of those pod containers and came to California. And then it was kind of lucky because about 3 weeks later, California completely shut down. So we've been lucky. We've completely escaped all of it, but we're definitely living indoors. But it's interesting because in Pittsburgh, it's like I couldn't just go walk around the streets because we were in the middle of this big city. Like, there's nothing. There's nothing open. There's nothing to go see. But here, I've got like the beach, like 2 blocks away, and there's nobody there, so
It's like I'm gonna
I
sneak
can go
out.
do things. But from what I see, vaccination stuff is lowering. We seem to be having a positive effect, and so that's great.
Well, it's also everyone's actually wearing their masks. Like I actually got COVID back in December, but the only reason I got it was because the people that were infected didn't wear it. I also
Right.
think some jerk
Right.
sneezed and put his hand on the clock out thing, but I'm just being extra on that one.
Oh, this is yeah, this is at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the I gotta say that's those were my most harrowing experiences when I go to the grocery store. I'm always like, get away from my those are my oranges. You're within 3 feet, you jerk. But yeah, I don't see an immediate COVID application for the wearable. Although there are who was it? There was somebody recently who came out with that ring. I forget the name of the brand, but that supposedly could do O2 detection and sort of
Oh yeah,
warn you
something
if
like
it.
that. But also, Apple's done the OT O2 detection in the watch now too. It's like $2,000 right, bucks to get it. Seven, but...
Yeah. And I know with things is coming out with one too. I some reason the Apple Watch, as great as their design is in every other way, I just don't love them. They're little bricks.
I'm gonna say, but it also bugs me that I've paid more than potentially more than my phone because I got the Google Pixel, so it's like $300. Paid more than my phone, and it's on my wrist, and I have to actually think about where to put my hand, or I'm gonna break my $800 device.
Yeah. They don't have the little screen protectors for the.
See, my dumb luck, because I bought a Garmin Vivo Active back when they were making it. Maybe they still do. I can't find it. But I went and I put my hand into the drawer, and it just sliced it off my hand. And I was like, ah. That was like $300 I just broke right there.
Yeah, I just have basic, like, this is, I mean, that's technically a smartwatch. This doesn't look like one, but I've broken a couple of those. But Fossil? See, this is another good example. Like, I mean, if you told everybody 10 years ago that they'd be wearing these biometric monitoring devices,
they'd all think you're insane.
Yeah, they think you're nuts, you know. And I love now when I'm hearing that, you know, the vaccines are going to put microchips in everyone so that the government can track you. And it's like, have you heard of a driver's license?
Have you heard of a cell phone? They don't need to go far.
Like, they got your picture. They got it all. You know, it's okay. Nobody really cares that much.
But it's too normal. It's been around long enough. It's not like it's the new, ooh, kind
of
thing.
Right, right. And I think what you described in terms of getting to the point of, like, typical-looking glasses, I mean, that might be the tipping point for BCI. I mean, our system, again, I'll email you the address to put in the notes, but it does. I mean, it looks cool. It's a slick design. But it does look, you know, it looks like an AR/VR headset. But I will say that the lens portion is detachable and replaceable in case you get it sliced off by a drawer. Although I don't know why you'd put your head in a drawer.
I want to say, the first question, why are you putting your head in there? the warranty for your factory would be like, why the hell did he put his head in the drawer?
That'd be a nice support ticket. Customer put head in drawer.
What do we do?
Well, this has been great. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
I mean, that was just kind of a fun conversation. I guess as a reminder, I'm Lucas. I'm a speech therapist. And we made a brain computer interface. They are onedotcognition.com. We'll get this stuff up there. But, you know, this was a lot of fun just because it also, you know, anytime being first to market is kind of scary, you know, in some ways. But it really provokes these fascinating conversations, right? Because then you get to think about, like, you know, what's the next step and what's the step after that, you know? In informatics, there's this idea of first, second, and third horizon. And, like, first horizon planning is, like, what I'm doing today. Like, okay, right. Like, I'm on a podcast, I've got some meetings, right? Second horizon planning is, like, the other stuff on my calendar and things I can do risk management about or whatever. And then the third horizon is, like, over the hill. It's like, I don't know. Like, you know, there's no way to risk manage for what's going to happen there. And I really like operating in the third horizon mentality, right. Like, you know, trying to, like, just speculate, you know, what is the world going to be like in 20 years? And, you know, 20 years ago, I think we thought it was going to be flying cars. But in retrospect, we would crash the heck out of those things. So, you know,
yeah, there's
practicality comes into play.
I'll say there's a whole – that could be a podcast in and of itself because it's like we can't drive ground cars. So why do we expect us to handle a four – like three-dimensional driving now?
Yeah. No, I can't handle – I like to say that I put my last car into airplane mode because I drove it off a cliff. So I'm,
oh, my God.
I'll stick with – well, it was like a 10-foot cliff. Okay. I'm exaggerating. But
it's still – it's a cliff.
It's more of an escarpment at that point, I think. But I'd love to hear from anybody who's interested. We're going to be launching this in the next few months. I would love to hear from folks that, have some ideas of other applications or maybe even have the capacity to do some gaming, some WebKit stuff. Our application front end is all built in Unity. If that helps anyone. And, you can get a hold of me at luke@lukestuber.com, but I'll send over links. And I'm just glad you had me. This was a ton of fun.
It was a ton of fun. Just quick add on. So just your website, or do you like, are you active on Twitter or Instagram kind of thing?
I don't know. I don't Insta the grams. I think I've Insta'd a few grams.
I'm not good at it either.
Twitter, I'm Luke SLP, Luke SLP. But most active, if you go to my website, lukestuber.com, which is lukestuber.com, it'll link to all the different social media. I would say that most of my content's on Facebook because I'm old.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
But and there's, I have a book coming out in 2 weeks. I was supposed to mention that.
Oh my gosh, that's a good thing. So. You want to go an extra 20 just talking about that?
No, it's but it's just called Becoming an Exceptional AAC Leader, and it's an anthology. It's like 15 of us. There's probably like maybe 700 to 1,000 people in the world that do this job. So like we all kind of know each other, and so we each wrote chapters about sort of how we got into this, and mine is about imposter syndrome. So that's anyway, it'll be on Kindle and all those other things, but yep, it is. And I guess a final note on my end is to say we could use more, like we need more people that are interested in this. And also we need, frankly, more men. This is, only 3% of speech pathologists are men, which is one of those crazy gender skews in the other direction that you don't hear about. So,
right.
If anybody's interested in learning more about the profession and assistive technology and rehabilitation engineering, it's incredibly rewarding. I mean, I get up every day just super excited about what I do. And when you have those aha moments with, someone who's never had the ability to do something before and they suddenly can, like it's life changing.
It really is. Yeah. I used to teach martial arts, and it was the moment the kid figured out, it's simple. It's like just how to punch correctly. Just the way their eyes light up. It's worth it. You can went through hours of pain, but like that moment wipes all of it away.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. That, although I haven't ever had that moment of punching correctly. Yeah, I got to work on that one.
Martial arts is like a lot of things. It's better when you go in person than try to do it augmented, because somehow with humans, I can't figure out through this. Maybe you could do it, and then we got to go. the actual seeing a person, the actual interactions, you can see it. But when you're on like a Zoom call or an AR, you can't see how far off they are. You can tell they're doing the general move, but you can't actually, like, I don't know if it's
interesting. I hadn't thought about that, martial arts having to go virtual.
My instructor had to do it for the longest time. And he's like, everyone's forms went bad because they weren't in person. He's like, they were all off by 20 degrees, but it looked correct on my side.
Right. Interesting. That's my wife's been doing like some virtual yoga sort of stuff, and I imagine that's a lot easier than martial arts. But
generally, I mean, as far as general form, you get like there's warrior and all that. And so you, as long as you do it enough, you'll know like, oh, okay, I need to do this one now, kind of thing. But like martial arts, even for me, I'm a black belt. If I just like this, that looks like a punch, but that's actually wrong. You're supposed to be here.
Really? Okay. This explains why I could never beat that guy in Wii Sports.
Yeah. Well, no, that one just punch as fast as you possibly can. Yeah. Just rabbit punch the shit out of him.
All right. I have my plan for the wearable. That'll be all right. The next app.
All right. Thank you. We definitely have to get you on in the future just for even an update.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to. We should have this thing out in a few months. And if we weren't just audio, I'd be happy to put one on. But I'll send you the links. Folks can go check it out, see some simulations, and, put your name on a list if you want to learn more.
Awesome.
Exciting stuff. Thanks for having me. And I'll talk to you again.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Well, congratulations. You made it to the end. You're an awesome person. Not many make it here. So, being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? If you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations. You're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel, change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome, and see you next time.